Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 271 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, May 3rd, 2017. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler. And normally at this time, I'd introduce my co-host, but I don't have one. And, first of all, I've been absent from recording the show here for the past couple of weeks. I think it was about two or three Wednesdays ago, my grandmother passed away. So that's one of the reasons why I didn't do a show. And then in between that time and the following Wednesday, there were some events that took place in the WordPress community, namely on Twitter, that my co-host may or may not have been involved in. This translated into some serious discussions, and because of those events and some other things throughout the community, I thought it was best that Marcus kind of take a hiatus from the show. I don't know if he'll be gone permanently or if he'll come back at some point. But that's the reason why I don't have a co-host. So I'm going to sort of do the show solo and invite some guest co-hosts on the show to not only sort of interview, but they can go over some of the headlines with me. And that's what the situation is with the show. And let's see, now that I got that out of the way, my special guest today is John James Jacoby, friend of the show. He's been on the show a number of times. he's always my backup plan, but he's also known as J-Trip or Triple J, depends. He's a 10-year veteran WordPress core contributor. He was the director of web engineering at 10UP for a brief nine-month period, and he also worked at Automatic Incorporated, where he worked on WordPress.org, Jetpack, and WordPress.com VIP. And he also leads the development of the BBs, known as BB Press and Buddy Press. And, wow, John James Jacoby, every time you come on, your bio gets longer.
Yeah, I just keep doing stuff. It's I guess you're supposed to keep adding it to it. I hope to one day be cool enough to have, like, a short, clever Twitter bio, but I'm not that creative or clever, really. So I just keep tacking things onto the list.
So let's see here. Great to have you on the show. We're going to talk about who knows what. So that'll be interesting. But I do want to talk about WordCamp Chicago. I'm going to do a bit of a recap there. And that took place this past weekend. Chicago is one of my favorite cities. And WordCamp Chicago is a very well-organized, well-run event. And it was evidence of that this past weekend. Had a great time. And before we get into it, I wanted to talk about a personal experience I had getting to Chicago. this was kind of crazy, but as I was boarding the flight, well, I'll start off by saying that I woke up during the day, I checked the weather, noticed that it was pretty windy here, around 30 mile an hour gust, and it was pretty windy in Chicago, and we were going to fly through some weather. So my wife was going to be flying for the first time. I told her, well, it's probably going to be a bumpy ride. So she's like, I was kind of checking the weather. I knew it was kind of probably going to be turbulent at some point. And maybe that was the first straw that sort of started building up the anxiety in myself and within my mind. And we did the whole spiel. We went to the park and ride, got in the bus, got to the airport, checked in, waited for the flight. And as we were sitting there waiting for the flight, I'm staring out the window. I'm looking at the clouds rolling by. I'm checking the radar. I'm just like, it's like I'm amping myself up. And I look over at my wife. I go, I've never really felt this way before, but I'm feeling really antsy about this flight. And, she doesn't know what to do or say because she's never been on a flight before. So we end up boarding the plane. And as we're on the plane, the anxiety and the panic levels like skyrocket. I don't know what's going on. I'm having my heart rate is increasing. I've never really gone through that before. And at one point, I look over to my wife. I go, will you be upset if we deboard the flight? And she says, no, whatever we got to do so you stop feeling this way. So they close the door and they're getting ready to taxi. And I call over the male flight attendant and say, is it too late to get off the plane? He said, yes. Then the anxiety went through the roof. That's okay. Now I'm freaking out. And I said, look, I got to get off this plane now because if we get up in the air, something bad's probably going to happen. So I ended up pinging the other flight attendant, who was a woman, And I don't know, maybe she was more compassionate to my situation, but I asked her, can I please get off the flight because I feel like I'm going to have a medical emergency with a panic attack. She said, oh, yeah, yeah, we haven't left. You can go. So we did the whole deboarding procedure. They let us off the plane. It kind of worked out for two other people who were able to take our place and get on the plane. We went to the desk, had to cancel my flight. My body was shaking. I was trembling. And as I'm going through this experience, my wife says, maybe this is your gut instinct. Maybe this is a sign. You know, if you've never gone through this before, maybe there's a reason why you're doing this. And I'm thinking, maybe it is. Maybe this is my gut instinct. And that kind of ramped into all the other, I don't know, psychological, mental thoughts that were going through my head that ramped up my anxiety levels. Now, it turns out that the plane landed safely, but we ended up getting in the car. We went to the parking lot, got in the car. My luggage went bon voyage to Chicago, ended up making a 5.5-6 hour drive there, and didn't experience really any turbulence on the highway. I mean, it was windy, but you know, it wasn't shaking me around in midair, knowing I had nothing. You know, there's nothing I could do about it. So, you know, with all this said and this experience, I think it also ties back to the very rough, scary landing I had last year when I was on my way to Work Camp US in Philadelphia, where we were landing in a storm and it was very windy and the plane was going this way, that way. I heard alarms going off in the cockpit. You know, that was the first time throughout all my years of flying to different work camps that I was legitimately scared. So I almost think that has something to do with what happened with this experience. All I know is that I'm done flying for a while. And, you know, I'll be taking more road trips in the near future, but I wanted to throw that out there. And ever since I kind of went public with what was going on, I was sort of live tweeting my panic attack on Twitter. But I got a lot of compassion from people who said, you know, all it takes is one bad turbulence or experience with turbulence, and that's it. They're done. You know, they have to take medication before they board the flight. Or, of course, some other people, you know, stop at the bar, have a couple beers, you know, get that buzz going. That kind of takes the edge off. But, wow, you know, what an experience. I really don't want to go through that type of sort of borderline anxiety attack ever again. That was scary.
That's why they call it a fight or flight response, literally, right? Like it sets in and you decided not to fly. And literally decided that flight was not the thing you were going to do. But that's why my wife and I tend to drive to as many board camps as we can. I mean, we like road trips a lot anyways, but the process of flying is almost more complicated or more uncomfortable than the actual getting on the plane itself. I had a similar experience flying to New York from Miami, where the plane essentially landed crooked. Like the wind was rotating the plane enough where you could hear the engines trying to rotate the plane back straight while it was landing, and everyone applauded once we touched down. And I think lots of people have probably had a similar experience, but it changes you a little bit where you you realize sort of how, even though there's this entire process and everyone flies and a million people fly a day all the time, it's still really mechanical and pretty primitive, and just a lot of things have to happen correctly in order for it to go well. And so you're not the only one that has felt a lot of anxiety about getting on. Or even just driving to the airport where you're like, nope, today is not the day where we're going to do this. So I agree. Done there.
Yeah. And did the whole panic attack. And I've been on flights where it's been nice and smooth, but yeah, I think I've been triggered with that, with that landing to Philadelphia. So, by the way, I don't think in all the statistics, turbulence has been a factor or has specifically caused a crash of an airline. Planes can withstand a hell of a lot of turbulence. Just ask the folks who fly over the Andes Mountains, where there's always a lot of turbulence. But it makes for a very uncomfortable and at times scary experience. In fact, I just read a news article where in clear skies, this plane experienced severe turbulence. And I, for some reason, I think it was at a time when the seatbelt signs are off, and it was, the turbulence was so bad that people were being lifted out of their seats and hitting their heads.
I'm sure. Yeah.
And there's like 20 injuries, and it just came out of thin air, literally, you know, in clear skies. Yeah. So, you know, there's all that. Anyways, I say all that just to sort of share my personal experience out there with flying. And I will be definitely doing more road trips here in the near future, or, you know, bus travel, taking trains, something that's not involving going thousands of feet up in the air.
Did you get caught in the rain on your drive?
On the way there, not so much. On the way home, yes.
Yeah. That was the thing, is I drove too, because I'm only about 2 hours away, but the rain really made the commute to and from just less than desirable, because you're, even though you're not in an airplane, I mean, you're still driving in the pouring rain where you still can't see very well. So what should be a pretty comfortable and fun drive turns into just, like, for you, it must have been, what, 6 hours? So
yeah, like six hours.
So, you know, while you're driving through the rain, it's still tense. I mean, yeah, you're in your own space and it's comfortable, but it's not as relaxing as it probably should be.
Well, and then driving through Western Indiana on the turnpike, where they have decided that, even though we have two lanes, we're going to repave most of one lane and we're going to close things. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of traffic, but I told myself, hey, I don't care about the traffic. I don't care how fast we go. As long as I'm not feeling the way I did on that plane, I'm okay with it.
Yep.
And I had a positive outlook that whole trip. So when I got to Chicago, it was a great event. I really enjoyed seeing some people I haven't seen in a long time with the hallway track. I got to see a couple of different sessions in Chicago. And in fact, you were on one of the sessions. And, you know, you've been doing these things lately, I've seen, at a couple of different camps, where you just go up on stage, there's no slides, and you just – tell a story, you talk to people. Mm-hmm. And it's like an opening up moment for you. Mm-hmm. during those 40 minutes. Kind of tell our listeners what you talked about during your session at WordCamp Chicago.
Well, Ryan Irwin, who's one of the organizers, comes up to, we have a meetup where I live that's called the Computer Club. So we talk about
East Troy, right?
East Troy. Yep. So etcc.io will just redirect you to our meetup page. And, you know, we have dozens of members. I guess we're 280 members or something. And so our meetups will pull sometimes 30, 40 people. And we've talked about everything from hacking Arduinos and some WordPress stuff occasionally, to other PHP things, some Python stuff, Django, and then like lock picking or cryptography or 3D printing. We talk about pretty much anything. And so Ryan has come up a couple of times because it's pretty close for him. And so he had said, hey, we're doing WordCamp Chicago. You should apply to speak. And so, okay. So, you know, I apply and I'd like to at least come up with a topic. And so Ryan says, why don't he's, you know, heard me tell some stories from time to time. And so he's, you know, maybe talk about what you do or some work or, some kind of story time. And so, the title of my talk was The Day That I Broke WordPress.org. And in the process of doing that, and from the time submitting my talk and then having the talk get approved and seeing the communications come through, one of the things with me with slides is that I'm not a super good designer, and I don't like when slides are just a template of slides where you can kind of tell that it looks the same as everybody else's. Like, there are some people who are really good with slides, like Andy Nason, and there are a lot of people that can manage to put together a really good slide deck unique.
The people who contribute and help design Matt Mullewake slides for State of the World.
Exactly, right? Like, Matt's slides were brilliant. I thought this year Matt's slides were, like, particularly awesome. It was just well thought out. It was a good flow to it. I don't know. And so I have a problem with slides because if I do my slides too far in advance, then My anxiety sets in because I have a tendency to talk ahead or talk around my slides or talk out of order. And then I can't really stick to the agenda of my slide deck very well. And so I usually do my slides the day of my talk or like a day ahead of time so that the talk is pretty fresh in my mind. And with this particular venue at WordCamp Chicago, you had to do your slides like weeks and weeks in advance because they had to set them up in a separate audio-visual room where you would have a remote to control your slides, but you couldn't just plug your laptop in and project onto the TVs or the projectors behind you. And so that pretty much sealed the deal for me that I was not going to be doing slides I give a good talk. I think it's probably not a good audience experience if I'm not going to be able to be my best in front of people. And so I like to think that I have occasionally have some compelling stories or perspectives on things. And so I feel very lucky that I have gotten positive feedback about my particular style of WordCamp presentation because it starts to be a little bit avant-garde with me just being on a stage by myself with no slides telling a story for 45 minutes is maybe not everybody's WordCamp cup of tea, but at least several people seem to appreciate it. And so if everyone is okay with me continuing to do it, then I'm okay continuing to try. And so I basically told a story of not just like the day that I broke WordPress.org for about 15 minutes worth of time, but like how I got to that point, like what I felt and what I think maybe caused me to miss the thing that I missed that locked up the WP users database table for about 15 minutes worth of re-indexing 8 million users at the time or whatever it was. And so it covers a lot of things from what I've learned about like being an adult or what I've learned about writing code or learning PHP or the way that my brain has a tendency to sift through things or trust check things or work through things and some of the tools that I use to make sure that everything works okay. And so I think that each one of these things is sort of a learning experience, and I think it's easy. I forget sometimes that I've been doing this for so long because it still seems so fun for me that I like to. I mean, it's kind of show and tell. It's kind of sharing what I've learned through the mistakes that I've made, and so that was my talk basically. And it was it's fun for me, and other people seem to really enjoy it. So so it was fun.
Now, one of the things that struck me during your presentation is you were sort of talking about your mindset or your thought process or some of the things that you deal with in your brain. And you say you came out and said that you're hypervigilant in combination with being ADHD, which I said on Twitter was a tough combo, but maybe you can sort of dive into a little bit more about what that means, especially that the hypervigilant, which was a new term to me.
So the ADHD, sort of the diagnosis for that, I think was a long time ago, but it wasn't until I did more reading and research and into like the varieties of just the different types of ways that people's brains work. And so my particular flavor of ADHD tends to be primarily inattentive. And so if you're listening to this, you can I'll let you Google your own and do your own research. But for me, reading that article or what that meant, it was eye-opening in that it really did like. It checked a lot of boxes for me where I was like, oh yeah, I totally have all of those things. Like, and at the time I didn't even really think that any of those things were particularly bad. Like it was always like a challenge or using those particular functionalities to my advantage as much as I possibly could. And then, and so that was once I had that, once I had that education about what that was, made it easy for me to say, okay, well, now if I can define what the things are that I think I might miss, or what the things are that are going to be distractions, or I can define the things that will not help me succeed, means I can identify them and work around them in an easier and a more straightforward way. And so that is pretty much been what I've done for the greater portion of my adulthood. But the hypervigilance thing is like a relatively new term for me too, because for me it was a thing that I didn't know that other people didn't have. I sort of just assumed that that like it was a choice, or it was like it was people having a blip, and why does everybody have a blip where they're not paying attention, or where whatever it is. And so the examples that I used in my WordCamp Chicago talk were how it made me a good roller hockey player because I could kind of predict a few more moves ahead than it seems like most people could, or it made me good at autocross or driving a car because I'm looking really far ahead and I can see where cars are merging and where they're going to go and what they're going to do and who's going to break and who's going to pass and who's going to cut you off. These things are all pretty predictable for me because I can kind of see and sense like relatively tiny movements and little flinches and this is always a thing that for some reason has felt pretty normal to me. And so the way that has helped me in life has largely just been predictive. It's almost been intuition. It's been being able to tell that someone is unhappy with you. And so I can just ask, like, what's wrong? Well, is there something wrong? Did I do something wrong? But also, like, do you need help? Is there something that I can do to help you? And so being able to sense that, like, I'm not being as helpful as I should, or that someone needs help, or that I've done something wrong, has always been pretty natural, but not in a way that, at least in my own head, has become has become something negative, like is like a constant anxiety or paranoia. This is just like a thing that I can identify that is just an always on process that just never turns off.
Yeah. Well, for listeners who may not know, I mean, it's Wikipedia. Take that for what you will. I like Wikipedia. Usually it's pretty accurate most of the time. But the definition of hypervigilance that they have is it's an enhanced state of sensory sensitivity accompanied by an exaggerated intensity of behaviors whose purpose is to detect threats. Hypervigilance is also accompanied by a state of increased anxiety, which can cause exhaustion. Other symptoms include abnormally increased arousal, a high responsiveness to stimuli, and a constant scanning of the environment for threats. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know. And some part of that, it kind of reminds me of Terminator. You're just standing there, you're scanning around the room for threats.
So it's, for me, it was never about threats. Maybe at some point when I was, I mean, when you're little, I guess, I don't know, like, how does a brain grow into having this as like a process? But for me, it was never about threats as much as it was about not missing out on important details. And so it almost is like in the course of naturally being primarily inattentive, I had somehow tried to compensate by paying attention to as many things as possible. And then everything kind of flattened out where I'd really do try to like look both ways before crossing the street, but also like not stand too close to the road where someone who isn't paying attention might take me out. Right. Like I don't really think I have a ton of like OCD type behavior where everything has to be straight or I'm like checking that the doors are locked 1,000 times, but like I still do try to make sure that, that I have a routine that I can stick to, because if I don't have some routines in some ways, then I instantly forget, to do something, or I get distracted by something that has caught my attention in the corner of my eye, and then sort of forget to come back to the thing that I was just thinking about or working on. And so to me, these things have always felt pretty natural. And so when people describe like actually having some sort of obsessive compulsive disorder, which I don't like, because most people that say, oh, I'm so OCD about a thing, you're not, because you're neither obsessive nor compulsive about the thing. It's like a, you sort of use it to like very jovially talk about somebody else's. I don't really like using that, or when people say that, but I don't, for me, it's just, I don't know. It's learning more about myself and like the ailments or the reactions or the way that like my brain naturally thinks about things is sort of, it's like a fascinating study that you, I have, feel like I have a limited amount of time, you know, to figure out if I've got 60 more years to go, isn't a lot of time to figure yourself out. So,
so knowing what you know about yourself, you know, with the ADHD and the hypervigilance, you've had a career that's been a 10 up, it's been an automatic, in recent years, you've sort of gone out on your own, either through crowdfunding or through company paid sponsorships to work on WordPress. Just out of curiosity, knowing what you know now about how your brain functions and works, how do you think those two things in the past and maybe now have impacted your career? I mean, have you found a way to sort of channel that into maybe being beneficial things or working with those things?
That's a good question. Yeah. So like if I had
is that too deep?
No. I think if I had to think back to the things that I struggled with personally at companies like Automatic and 10Up, for example, which would be like my two most recent career jobs where someone had actual, real, true, live, day-to-day expectations of me. One of the things that was challenging for me at Automatic, I think most people would call FOMO, sort of the fear of missing out on all the cool things that everybody is working on or doing. But for me, there really truly was so much cool stuff going on that I was like trying to pay attention to, because so much of it seemed really relevant to all of the things that I was working on or the people that I enjoyed working on things with. That it was a little bit overwhelming for me to figure out how what station am I listening to, instead of listening to every single channel of things coming in, what really are the things that actually feel like the right things to pay attention to. And so it was never that I was distracted, and I don't really feel like it got to a point where I was like not completing my job tasks, but it was taxing to be subscribed to 120 P2s or blogs that all had updates coming in, and then things happening on IRC and work coming in and stuff to do and tasks to complete and expectations to meet and posting my own things. And so I think for me, that was a challenge that I didn't like. Usually for me, when I'm in those moments, I haven't historically said like, oh, like this is a behavior that I should actually change. It's mostly like, this just seems very natural, so this is just what I'm going to do. And when you work remotely, no one knows that you're doing something in like a weird way. And so,
isn't that the truth?
Yeah. So, and with 10Up, I would say I almost had like the exact same problem, but like, 10 times exponentially, because there was so many teams and so many jobs, and it's a completely different environment that I just can't really perform very well in, because it's lots of conversations, juggling lots of interactions with lots of teams and people and developers all at the same time, in addition to like, this needs to be done today, and we need to review something today, and we need to ship something for somebody tomorrow, and we need to do this really big intense thing the next day. And for me, it was just, there were just too many things for me to do or help with or pay attention to that all required so much dedicated attention for me that, I mean, it didn't take very long for me to be able to say, like, hey, Jake, I don't think I'm doing very well. And for everyone to say, yeah, we kind of feel the same way. So I think they're knowing now what I know then, I think I wouldn't have even accepted the position, honestly, because it wouldn't have been a good job for me. And there's a part of me now, having hired my own employee and seen a little bit more on what that means and entails, that it feels really good that I have friends that were comfortable and trusted me enough to like offer me a job and pay me to do something for them for like 9 months worth of time, where, I mean, I don't know that I provided 9 months worth of value or that I really like performed very well in that role. And then to be able to leave that job, I think, relatively gracefully, and still have friends that work there and be able to interact with everyone as if this mistake never happened is reaffirming at how mature and understanding and warm that like the WordPress community at large actually is, because it's very easy to feel upset or hold a grudge or disappointment or whatever in when something doesn't work out. And that has not been my experience so far. So yeah, it's impacted me in a lot of neat ways, I think, where it does force me to be a little bit reflective, I guess.
I know when I talked to you about your career in previous employment opportunities, I know you highly value and I guess respect your time you had at Automatic, and I know you've reflected at your time at Automatic quite often, and it's you have fond memories of that. But it wasn't too long ago that you actually published an apology post to Automatic along the lines of, I'm sorry, I wasn't the best employee I can be. And that sort of came out of left field for me, but listening to you describe these things and your thought processes and what have you, did that go into why you wrote that apology? What inspired that post?
That was probably about the time when I had, when I had spent some time off and really kind of studying my own approach to just work and getting things done and trying to be the best employee or friend or husband or contributor or volunteer or whatever that I could be in. And I think Automatic as a company is particularly in the WordPress space and on the web, and even just as an ethos or as a meaningful position to have in life is really a great company to have started or owned, and at least having a relationship with Matt or having worked with him in the past and knowing him pretty well. It's kind of nice that to think of a piece of software that started off as a fork of something else becomes this really big, huge thing that eventually employs 500 people and helps provide a free, safe place for people to have a voice on the web and for people to work from home or wherever they're comfortable working from and to have good benefits and good coworkers and a support structure, and to grow something like your creation, your piece of software into something that is way bigger than you or it is. It's just a really neat thing to watch happen. And it wouldn't surprise me if my job at a company like Automatic would literally be the best potential job that I will ever have, because it was, the people were so cool and the work that we were doing felt really meaningful and was rewarding and exciting and paving your own way and inventing things sort of on a day-to-day basis. It's And if you don't feel well, you get to sleep in and then work a little bit harder the next day, and no one is really mad at you about that. I mean, it really is a cool concept that it's neat to actually see work out, especially with, you know, companies like Yahoo that had a lot of remote employees several years ago that pulled back on that. And companies talk about how you need to have everyone in the same location, or the majority of jobs aren't as comfortable as working from home, let alone inspiring or challenging or rewarding. So it's just it's a pretty sweet environment. And so, I mean, I think back on my time there, not only pretty fondly, but like, it's sort of a wasted opportunity to maybe make some change that I maybe won't be able to now, or that will be more difficult to do because there's just not as much exposure or resources or whatever else. So, yeah, I mean, it's like, Brad Williams sort of called it my love letter to Automattic, which is like not what kind of not the point, but it is like, you know, it's like you look back on your college years and you think like, man, no, those were good times. But like while you're in college, you're like, this is miserable. This sucks. I'm broke and I'm eating ramen and ketchup and like, I'm getting straight D's or whatever. And like, but you look back on it, you're like, I met some of my best friends got to have the best experiences or whatever else. And so for me, it feels a little bit like that where I'm happy that I have so many friends that still work there that they have the great jobs that they have. I would like to eventually like be able to do something similar, to have happy employees and be able to provide a healthy, happy environment for people that are looking to sort of do something similar. But gosh, it seems like such a long road to get there. And I don't know. So yeah, I look back on it pretty fondly.
So one of the big things that's happened to you lately is that you have become you were elected as a trustee on the board of trustees, yeah. I believe, for East Troy. Boy, I almost said Michigan. I don't want to get slapped here. East Troy, Wisconsin, which is a village.
Wisconsin.
I think there's a population of what, 7,000 folks or something like that?
4,000.
4,000, yeah. All right. Yeah. So we're talking about a small city. Why in the world did you get involved in the sort of governmental processes of your local village? And now that you're elected and you're a trustee, I'm curious as to what lessons have you learned through, you know, these years of open source software development? Do you think you can apply to the governmental part of your city, of being a trustee?
So I talked about this in Chicago with Boone and Aaron Campbell and a couple others, where I think working in open source is already a very volunteer based thing, and so being in a governmental position is very much about giving your time and your opinions and your thoughts away and being wrong the majority of the time and asking questions as much as you can, and also is important in terms of the support structure that you have. And I think where East Troy is really lucky in that we have a very strong village administration. We have a really outstanding chief of police. Our Department of Public Works is they work insanely hard on keeping water, sewer, infrastructure, trees, trimming, mowing, everything. Like, everyone here hustles. And even for a village that's only 4,000 people, there's still a lot that needs to get done on a limited staff. And so it's very much like open source software, where you have 1, 2, 5, 10, in the case of WordPress, you know, dozens of contributors that are volunteering largely their time to focus on creating something that is or maintaining something that is bigger than they can be by themselves, and doing it because they are passionate about it. And so there are many correlations between contributing or volunteering to open source or WordPress as there are to being a trustee. And so the one of the things that that I have learned even relatively recently that is one of those things that is really similar is even though with open source everything is open, it is the source code is available for people to read. It is very transparent in terms of one's ability to look at it, to resell it, to fork it, to branch it, to rename it, to contribute to it, to do whatever they want. Their government is the same way, where my communications with someone at any point, but particularly if there is evidence or if it's about something that is pertinent to an issue, they are subject to open records requests. These are conversations anyone can ask for and say, I want to see the email thread that my village trustee had with this person about what's going on. And that is open for anyone to see and view. And so on the same side of that coin, most open source software projects like WordPress has a security team. And so there are still a number, there comes a point where something is so important that it can't be 100% transparent. And that has to happen in government in a closed session if it's something that could affect somebody's reputation or could be a review about an employee that doesn't belong on the public record, because this is feedback that has to happen about somebody personally that doesn't involve everybody else's knowledge. And so if anyone that has ever walked the line of having a security vulnerability in their theme or plugin or in core or anything else is going to be instantly familiar with the concept of having this like transparency be the default and then having to occasionally fall back into this closed session where the mics are off and nobody's taking notes and nothing that happens in that closed session can leave that closed session. And so that becomes tricky when your community of 4,000 people and closed session can be about your neighbors. They can be about your friends. They can be about people that you see every day. And anything that happens in that closed session, I can't talk about it. I legally have an obligation to uphold the Constitution to not leak this information that I have gleaned from as a result of the role that I'm in now. And so it's the education that I'm getting from my volunteering for my local government is fascinating for the legislation side, for the ordinance side, for just the rules to follow and why they're there kind of thing. But it's also an interesting just socially to see how people in the village that I live are just happy to have new ideas and fresh perspectives and to be like, treated fairly and listened to and heard is something that I think some citizens here didn't feel with our previous administration. And so for me, I sort of moved back to, I mean, this is where I grew up, and I moved back here because growing up here, I don't feel like I had a really good experience. And I wanted to, I really like where I live, and my family is still here. And so I had hoped to come back and as a more mature person with some experience and some new perspectives on things to try and make this as good of a place as I can for the people that maybe aren't having a super great time either, like I didn't when I was a kid.
So do you guys end every board meeting with patches and pull requests welcome?
No, we do start every meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance, though.
Oh, okay, cool. Do you sit down? Do you stand? Do you kneel? Do you protest?
No, I mean, we stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, but otherwise we sit at a desk that is just a very standard looking U-shaped desk. It's sort of a multi-purpose room, and so the local the local judge uses the same desk for the local court and for citations and stuff that happens. So
yeah, do you have to be the trustee president to do the gavel?
You have to be the judge to do the gavel. The gavel is strictly for the judge. The president and our current president it doesn't seem like the gavel type. He's pretty relaxed about things, so I don't think that he would even use it if there was one.
Well, congratulations on your election and being, I guess this would be a cliche statement, but I mean, being the change you want to see in your city, pretty much taking on that role and really getting an education for how everything works, you know?
Yeah. Thank you. It's fun. I mean, if I can, it's something new and it's something that, it does mean a lot to me and, it's not always easy, but it at the end of the day, it is immensely rewarding and I really like learning. And so there's a lot to learn and a lot that's going on. So, if somebody else is thinking about it, out there who happens to be listening, my experience so far has been really positive. And, if you have questions, I'm happy to help.
So what do you say we dive into some of the headlines here and give these folks, our listeners, a heads up on what's been happening lately in the community?
Sure, let's do it.
All right. So I want to start off by saying that Automattic looks like they're going to close their San Francisco office at Trombone, located at 140 Hawthorne, San Francisco, California. And that space was actually the host of the WordCamp San Francisco 2014 After Party. It's also been used as a venue for a lot of local meetups. In fact, on episode 101 of the Stack Overflow podcast, Matt Mullenweg, CEO of Automattic, announced that the company will be closing its office pretty much because no one goes in there and uses it. He says on average about 5 people go in and use it on a regular basis. Now we're talking about a 15,000 square foot building, so I guess each employer, each person who goes in there and works on it gets 3,000 square feet of their own to work in. Now, apparently back in, I think it was 2013, the company got a really good lease on the building, so they've actually been able to maintain that. However, the property has already been listed through Colliers International, which is a global real estate company, which has more than 500 offices spread out through 67 different countries. And just a little bit of background info on the San Francisco office. It used to be a Fairtex location, and Fairtex was a manufacturer of combat equipment for Muay Thai and mixed martial arts. And the building was completely renovated in 2013. That's when Automattic picked up the lease on it. There you go. In fact, I learned throughout this post that I thought the office in San Francisco was the only one that Automattic has in the U.S., when in fact they have one in Maine. They call it Automattic East, which is in Westbrook, Maine. And I think that kind of makes sense. That's where they actually picked up, that's where Sam Hotchkiss, the founder of Brew Protect, lived. I think he lives in New Mexico now, so I don't know what they're going to do with that office. But I know a handful of other employees and people there on the East Coast work from there. And the other office that Automattic has is in Cape Town, South Africa, where, of course, a number of WooCommerce employees are located, and that's where they work from. So I had a good time. I'm glad. I didn't get a chance to see the Automattic office when it was on Pier 39, I believe it was called, where it was kind of
Pier 38, yeah.
Pier 38. I always get the number confused. But it was sort of like an incubator for all these startups where the pier was located. I heard that location was pretty cool. But as far as this venue is concerned, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great space. I mean, if I lived nearby, I'd work from there, you know, every day, because right after I'm done with work, you know, I could do a little shuffleboard, or, you know, I got this great big space to do whatever in. So it's kind of sad to see it go. But when San Francisco is considered one of the, last year, it was named the most expensive city to conduct business in, according to a report by the CBRE. Well, when you only have a couple of people using it on an everyday basis, it kind of doesn't make sense financially to keep it around. So who knows if we'll see them get a office and a a cheaper city here in the U.S. But we bid farewell to the automatic Hawthorne office.
That makes me really sad. I really like that office a lot. It was, it's really beautiful for anyone that hasn't been there or, you know, maybe wants to go see it before the doors close. It's a really cool space and I'm excited to see what happens after the Hawthorne closes. If there is something else, if something ends up in, maybe in Houston where Matt is from, or if there's a different space that comes into San Francisco, or what happens next. That's exciting to me.
And one of my favorite parts of that building was the T-shirt museum from all the various word camps across the world, all the cool designs. So you go in there, and there's also some WordPress swag in there. And I know that Matt, when I asked him about what's going to happen to those items, he said the items in the museum will be saved somewhere. Now, whether that's a storage room, a locker room, whether that's somewhere that only Nicolas Cage could get access to, I don't know. But I hope those items are saved, because there are some really cool T-shirt designs in that little museum. It was a nice little area.
And cool photography, too. I mean, really cool, yes, old sort of like historical photos. It's a really cool space. I really like it.
So, yep. In terms of technical news, maybe you'll be able to chime in on this, but we learned that WordPress 4.8 will end support for Internet Explorer versions 8, 9, and 10. According to Matt Mulloway, who made the announcement on the Make Core blog, WordPress 4.8 will drop support for those versions, and the numbers are pretty paltry in terms of user base. And Matt says that even he realizes that some folks who are running these browsers are probably stuck with them because it's probably something out of their control. But he says, depending on how you count it, those browsers combined are either around 3% or under 1% of total users. But either way, they've fallen below the threshold where it's helpful for WordPress to continue testing and developing against. Now, that's not to say that, you know, take, for example, the Gutenberg, which is the name of the brand new editor that the team was working on. It's one of the core focuses for WordPress this year. There has been some discussion in terms of browser fallback and backwards compatibility and how far the new editor and its features should be supported. And it turns out, apparently, the full editor will only have to support Internet Explorer 11 and versions after that. For 10, 9, and 8, it doesn't mean that the thing will completely stop, but it will probably just be a bare-bones text editor as a fallback. And, of course, with the declaration of ending support for Internet Explorer 8, 9, and 10, the next thing that everybody seemed to chime in about was, okay, let's do the same for PHP, especially for 5.2 and some of the other versions that have been end of life. So far, we haven't seen too much movement on the PHP side of things, but the numbers slowly but surely continue to drop. I think in large part thanks to the sort of getting the word out about the performance enhancements of PHP 7 and a lot of the major hosts trying to not only migrate their customer sites or upgrade them from old versions of PHP 5. Whatever to 7, but also a lot of these hosts are doing PHP 7 by default for all new customer sites. So all of that seems to be helping. Jacoby, your thoughts as a developer?
One of the things I liked about Matt's post is paying homage to the old versions of IE and what they brought and how they sort of revolutionized the web back when they were important and relevant and it was what we were all using. It is sort of a happy trails kind of you look back fondly on the things that we grew up with. I think it's nice as a developer to see see support for those browsers officially like not a requirement or part of the spec, because it dramatically it makes the project and the what is possible to do in the editor much, much simpler. And if support for those browsers was for some reason still a requirement, many of the ideas or concepts or things that I think we want to see in a brand new or in a revolutionized editor would basically just not even really be possible. So at trying to do graceful fallback or a really stepped degradation of, if you have this version of this browser does this, and if you have this version of this browser does that, and you do that 10 or 15 times and you're never going to ship, it's never going to be done. And so that's really awesome. I think it's totally fine. I think Browse Happy needs an update, right? But other than that, I think it's awesome. And the one of the things I thought about recently, having worked with some of the folks at Pantheon for a little bit now, is I think when we talk about web hosts and PHP versions, PHP, 5.6 or 5.2 or going to 7.0 or 7.1, I think it's easy for us or people that are passionate about WordPress that are in the community or that are sort of deeply involved or ingrained in it. There are some web hosts, and it's not uncommon for them to not be WordPress specific. They might be using PHPBB or MyBB or some cake PHP or Drupal or some other platform that, aside from Drupal, I think Drupal's okay. But if you have lots of old sites or forums that are running old versions of PHPBB, then you can't just pull the switch on being all PHP 7 because there's just too much legacy PHP code out there that are still active and live on sites. And the cost or the time to move and migrate those over is bigger than just WordPress. It's all of these projects. And so as much as we'd like to see, turning PHP 7 on by default is one thing that everyone is starting to do, but getting everyone to be 100% is it may not happen for a really long time.
Yeah, if I was a developer, the subject of backwards compatibility and building that in would drive me nuts. until I got to a point where, God, I really want to do something cool, but I can't because all these other people are on this. I have no control over it. It'd drive me nuts.
Mm-hmm. Historically, everyone that has worked on WordPress, I think, has really done a great job of maintaining backwards compatibility in mostly elegant ways. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to do. It's hard to do in real life, let alone with a code base that's so constantly and rapidly changing. So I think we're pretty lucky with the software that we know and love is as evolved and improved the way that it has and still managed to remain as backwards compatible that it has, I think is a testament to how much that everyone that contributes to WordPress and the core or anything else, just how much they care and how much time they do dedicate towards maintaining those things. That does not happen easily or on its own.
So for all those out there who are using the Shopify plugin, heads up, the plugin has been discontinued. It's also been removed from the plugin directory. At the time of its removal, it had about approximately 9,000 active installs, and it was actually developed by Web Dev Studios. And what it did is allowed people to create buy buttons and insert them into posts and pages. So according to a documentation page on Shopify's website, the plugin will be discontinued and not supported after June 30th, 2017. So WordPress users who want to display Shopify products on their sites should use the create a buy button for a product or collection and paste the embed code that's created into WordPress instead. So there was a bit of controversy around why did it disappear? I know that we tried to receive some comments from the plugin review team, but as is standard operating procedure, they cannot and will not tell you the exact reasons why a particular plugin was removed from the directory, because there's all sorts of things involved with that, namely security, and maybe it's none of our business. Who knows?
That too.
I wrote a post on the Tavern not too long ago about why plugins sometimes disappear from the directory. So if anybody has any questions about that, definitely give that a read. Mika gave us some great answers and sort of explains why sometimes that happens. According to a Shopify representative, he says that the plugin uses older code and methods that will no longer be updated or supported. There's also no longer a dedicated development team for it, so there's no resources to maintain or rebuild the plugin. So it's just going to go poof. It's just going to disappear.
That, that seems normal, right? Like, it's easy to think when something happens that there's something. It's easy to vilify somebody or think that maybe there's something more entertaining or more fascinating, or there's some drama or there's something going on. But more often than not, it's not the super elaborate, really fun idea that you'd think that it is. How many times has there been a PayPal plugin that uses an old API that breaks, that sits broken in the repo or someplace else, where I think it's actually really great that they identified that this was something that could potentially be a problem or that could be a bad user experience, and then proactively made it not a problem. It's unusual. You don't usually see people being that proactive with stuff like this, I don't think.
Well, in the case of the Shopify plugin being removed from the directory, it's not hard to connect the dots. They announced that they're discontinuing it. They probably got in touch with the plugin repo admins, or maybe somebody else did inform them that they're going to discontinue the plugin. So they removed it from the directory. So there's even fewer people who end up using it and get caught in the middle when it's suddenly, you know, discontinued, not supported in June. So I think that makes total sense. In fact, I think the team did the same exact thing for the Clef plugin, which had more than 1 million active installs, which I think is going to be discontinuing in June.
Pretty soon, yeah. The Clef was cool too, right? That's too bad.
Yes. Yeah, so they actually removed the plugin from the directory because, hey, let's try and do what we can to ease the impact, lessen the amount of people impacted by the change. And holy smokes, man, Clef, yeah, had over 1 million active installs. Based on all the feedback I read and some of the people I've talked to who used it, they had something great there with its user interface, its design, its passwordless way of doing things. Now, I have talked to some other people in the security space that kind of had some issues with the way their implementations were. On how to do passwords, but yes, sad to see sort of Clef go, and really was one of those products based on the feedback I saw was beloved by their customers. Mm-hmm. It's kind of crazy that they couldn't figure out a really good business strategy to keep it going.
Making money is hard. So even with 1 million subscribers,
it's, yeah, even, how about that? Right, so one of the things I wanted to mention is that WordCamp US 2017 is going to be happening in Nashville, Tennessee. So that's about an 8-hour drive for me. I'm not even going to talk about flights. They've ramped up ticket sales. Organizers plan for 2,500 attendees. Now, the goal is to sell between 2,000 and 2,500 tickets. However, depending on demand, they can accommodate more. Let me tell you, folks, if you've ever, going to a WordCamp with 2,000 people is something else. I went to the Philadelphia Convention Center where WordCamp US was held last year. We had so many people there, but you could have held that camp in a hallway. That's how big that building was. It was pretty crazy. But to have all these people under one roof, and what was really cool was watching Matt State of the Word with all those people in one room. That was pretty cool. So back to Nashville. The Music City Center is the venue. It's within walking distance to several of the city's attractions and museums. Organizers actually announced that the Renaissance Nashville Hotel is the official hotel for the event. Boy, I want to make a joke here regarding hotels from the last conference, but I'm not going to. But Triple J probably knows what I'm talking about.
I do.
So it's within walking distance of the venue. We'll offer special discounted rates for attendees. So if you're going to go to WordCamp US, double check the website. Make sure you use that discount. Usually it's a very good discount. You can get a great rate on some of these hotel rooms. So be sure to check out the WordCamp US website, where speakers will be announced. Actually, the speaker submission process is going to open up within the next few weeks. And then eventually they'll be chosen.
I think it's open. I thought they opened speaker submission. Yeah, I think it's open.
Oh, okay. So if you're interested in speaking at WordCamp US, go visit the website, which is 2017.us.wordcamp.org. So there you have it. Oh, and apparently there's a WordCamp Android app, so you can actually add the event to your calendar on your phone. So that's pretty cool.
Nice.
There you have it. So you planning on going to WordCamp US this year?
Oh yeah, WordCamp US is.
You have to.
It's
of all WordCamps.
Absolutely.
Well, on this side of the ocean.
It's so fun, and having it in a centrally located part of the country, I think, makes it a little bit more accessible, also drivable for more people. But WordCamp US for the past 2 years, I think everyone has been pretty lucky that the weather has really held out pretty nicely for Philly on both years that it was there. So, you know,
minus the night after the wind.
Yeah, I suppose that one night it was a little treacherous. But no snow, really, like not real rainy. And for like the days before and after too, it was, it's been really nice. So, you know, hopefully the South, treats us equally as well. But it's such a great event, and the organizing team that there is now for WordCamps is experienced and knows how to put on a great event and pick really good speakers. And, even the, WordCamp US, I think, for the past 2 years has been. I usually try to cruise the sponsor area because it's usually a lot of friends there. But it's you know, swag and bring T-shirts or you know stuff home or whatever. I like to bring a bag full of stuff to give to my friends' kids and like stress balls and stickers and whatever else. But the sponsor tables or the swag areas at WordCamp US are like. They're like the cream of the crop of yes. They're really good. So
last year in terms of swag, one of the most amazing swag gifts were the Wapu plush dolls. They were hit with the kids, they were hit with the adults, mm-hmm. and those things were of high quality. Those were cool.
Yeah, they were super cool. I mean, everyone just really goes all out. And so it's exciting to, you know, think of what everyone is gonna try to do. Because everyone wants to do better year after year, right? So now it's like the Super Bowl commercial of a WordCamp. Like I want to go down the sponsor aisle and see like what cool stuff there is to pick out.
That's a good analogy. All right. So, before we wrap it up here, since you haven't answered my Slack messages and because we couldn't talk about it at WordCamp Chicago, you got to give me an update on what's happening with the BBs.
Sure. So should I go through the list of questions you asked me in Slack that I politely ignored, or should I? what do you want me to do?
Well, I don't want to ask you why you ignored. Well, actually, I do know why, because you're going to tell me in Chicago we just didn't get around to it.
That's right.
Has had a number of point releases to fix either security issues or maybe every now and then a couple of bugs, maybe a maintenance release. Mm-hmm. I know that mm-hmm. 2.6 is in the second beta. It's been in the second beta for about 3 months. What's mm-hmm. Give us an ETA on when that possibly would be released or possibly another beta.
So there'll probably be one more beta. The thing that makes BB Press there are a few things, but the primary thing that has always sort of made BB Press tricky and it makes the move for people from BB Press 5 or 2.5 to BB Press 2.6 a fun one is 2.5 for most people in most situations has been really, really rock solid. I mean, yeah, we're on 2.5.11 or whatever we're on, but it's always been like a security, something or other has come through or like a neat performance tweak we can find that we can ship right away or something happens upstream in WordPress core that we can finally take advantage of inside of BB Press that we couldn't before. And so we're able to do these incremental releases to 2.5. But in the process of working on 2.6, some interesting things sort of all happened at the same time where we've landed ourselves back to kind of the old BB Press problem where WordPress.org is running the 2.5 and then is running sort of a hybrid of 2.6 to get some of the performance tweaks in there. And then a bunch of stuff gets turned off on .org. And so there are these like weird complexities to, like, okay, we've got everything moved over. We got rid of old BB Press pretty much all across WordPress.org in general. But now it's the merging of these ideas and things into 2.6, making sure that everybody's websites will migrate all of their data correctly to take advantage of these performance improvements in 2.6, and in such a way that it doesn't take down a forum that is heavily active, like something like WordPress.org is. And so there's a lot of, like, just like really cool performance things that we've learned that I kind of knew were going to be weird bottlenecks with the making of with BB Press being a plugin that we were able to fix and resolve in a lot of not too clever ways, but still ways that are backwards compatible and will improve everybody's lives that happens to be running BB Press. And so with every beta comes more feedback, and the closer we get to release is the more feedback that comes in. And so as we upgrade and move things on WordPress.org, and then we get more feedback, then we fix more things. And so with a small team, which is largely myself, Stephen Edgar, and then Sergey, who has kind of stepped up, and even Brandon Allen, there are a few that come and go. And so there is no dedicated resource on it, which was the problem even in 2014 when I did my Indiegogo campaign. And so I really am trying to spend a lot of time working on it, but I've also spent a lot of time on the security team and working on some WordPress core things like the all options cache and some multi-site stuff. And so it's BB Press isn't really anybody's focus again, and it is mine as much as I can afford for it to be. Knowing that these end up being pretty big issues and important ones that are mine to solve, because it's mostly my architecture and my old code. And it's nice that everyone really is stepping up and not being too grouchy about it. And it is sort of the anxiety sets in with, like, every day where I don't get to work on it. It's like, oh man, like, it just gets worse and worse. But it will ship, I promise. It will. I mean, not necessarily change people's lives, but it will be a better BB Press than it has ever been. So,
when do we want BB Press 2.7? 3 years ago. I'm just kidding.
I know, right? You're these are things that we've talked about for a really long time. So it's funny, but it is not untrue.
I know you well enough. I could say that without kidding.
You can. You'd never be in trouble. But things like adding, like, replacing comments with topics and forums or categories and those kind of things, like, those are things we've wanted for a really long time that, like, in theory I have conceptually working, but are they ready for prime time? I don't really think so. So things get infinitely pushed and back farther and farther, but the enhancements that have gone in to favorites, subscriptions, and, like, voices. One of the things that we did was move everything out of a bunch of serialized arrays, which is kind of the way that old BB Press stored things, out of user meta and into post meta. And so we have some custom meta queries that we can do that are not really all that slow and terrible the way that everyone relates WordPress post meta queries to be. And we take advantage of the fact the way that post meta works in general, to move some of that around to make it a lot faster and invalidate users a lot less in cache. And underneath it is essentially a new BB Press API that is called engagements. And so it is a way to track which users are engaged, generally speaking, with what post or what topic or forum or reply or whatever. And so for engagements, the favorites, subscriptions, and voices all use the engagements API to say what users have touched or interacted with these things. And so that makes it really powerful. So if someone does want to either change the way that it works or bolt on some new type of interaction with a BB Press topic or reply, like push notifications or or something else, there's an underlying API to allow that to happen. So these are like unplanned things that weren't really in the spec or in the scope of what the roadmap for 2.6 was, where once we started rebuilding, it was like, oh, of course, this is the way that this needs to be. And so every one of those weird little features just ends up, you know, taking a little bit longer and a little bit longer and then a lot longer. So, but it's in a good place now. And 2.5 has been so stable and so good that I don't want for 2.6. I want for it to be better for everyone and not worse. And so the migrating of things out of user meta and into post meta needs to be like 1,000% good. Like it needs to be so incredibly flawless that no one at all ever has any problems with it. And so I know like you've talked about, and there's been other people talking about like batch processors and data migration and big data moving and using WPCLI and all these things. And it's like, well, where is BBPress is still a user-facing product and so or a project. And as much as I'd love to just rely on WPCLI for every one of these things or build a UI around it or something else, we really can't yet anyways. So we do it the old-fashioned way, and it takes a little bit longer to do.
Well, I'll tell our listeners out there who are running a forum on BBPress 2.5 somewhere in the branch, based on all the feedback I've seen thus far, and you've already mentioned this, the performance improvements alone is a reason enough to upgrade to 2.6. In addition to running the latest and greatest, you know, security, the code, what have you. But I've seen some posts on the beta feedback forum posts for 2.6 beta where, yeah, people are seeing some significant performance improvements. So I don't know what kind of voodoo you've put in there, but it's working.
And so the best part about the voodoo is it all bubbles back up into core improvements too. Like the one thing that the BBs are really good at is pushing the envelope of what we can achieve inside the walls of WordPress, and then identifying the places where we can really push those fixes upstream. And so some things like user name in queries where we can get a bunch of users at the same time in a way that we weren't able to before, and just some taxonomy term stuff, things that we're able to help improve the greater software at in a experimental push the envelope kind of way. So they're very fun projects for me to work on. As much as I enjoy working on other plugins and multi-site and WordPress core, BuddyPress and BBPress will sort of always be the hits that I play. So it's always fun to work on them all the time.
And last but not least, kind of give us a quick update on what you're working on and what the team's working on for BuddyPress.
So BuddyPress, everyone has sort of been chipping away at a new, what we call a template pack. And so since the BBs come with a little bit of some middleware to make it work with any WordPress theme, give or take. I mean, core themes it works a little bit better with, but and that theme integration or the template pack that BuddyPress comes with is a little old at this point. It's really based on some of the older social networking conventions that we're all kind of familiar with, but are maybe getting a little, I don't know, they're
stale.
Stale's a great word. And so everyone has been working on or chipping away at a new, more modern template pack to replace our default. And so originally it used to be called BP Default. When we moved it over to using template packs, I had renamed it to BP Legacy as sort of like the nod that this was going away eventually. And then you know, improvements keep going into the way that themes are loaded and work, and the customizer comes in, and then there's just all these things that happen around us that we constantly are playing catch up. And so they've been working on BP Nouveau on GitHub for a number of years at this point. And so ideally 2.8 really is the acceptance and merge of that into BuddyPress proper, where it is the new default for template packs. and then a number of sort of under the hood performance tweaks and things that go in all the time. And we've also switched to having release leads, very similar to WordPress core, because the BuddyPress contributor team is the pool is just bigger, and there are more people that are constantly contributing and more passionate. So Hugo, who's a very long time contributor and really shepherding the BP Nouveau template pack, is leading 2.8. And so it is highly likely.
If I recall, Hugo's also a talented designer too.
Super good. BuddyPress as a project has been really lucky to have everyone stick around and be so good. And so BP Nouveau looks great, and it looks great in all the core themes, and it feels nicer. It just generally is a better, a more well put together template pack than what BP Legacy is, and it has better, just easier to read, more well thought out JavaScript in it. And because our old BuddyPress.js file was, again, pretty long, literally in the tooth, so it's nice to have something that I think is a little bit easier to work with. And then I think I said 2.8. I think I meant 2.9. But the one of the things that has been sort of my one of the things that I have wanted for us to do with BuddyPress going forward would be to start filling in the gaps for data moderation. So being able to view private messages within WP admin and notifications and friends and those kind of things. And so
I was going to say one of the other major things I think the team was working on is that BuddyPress kind of creating its own REST API.
So yeah, there is an initiative on GitHub to have its own REST API endpoints. And now, especially now that the REST API is in core and we have a foundation to build on, makes it much easier to see how our endpoints would work. And Boone and Ray have both spent, and Paul Gibbs also have all, over the course of the past few years, have spent a lot of time filling in some gaps in the base classes that we have that you query a database with to get notifications and friends and activity stream items and that kind of thing. And so I think we have a lot of the good PHP level functionality to eventually start filling in the gaps of a REST API. But one of the things that I have been looking into a lot is GraphQL from the folks at Facebook. And so something like GraphQL starts to fit a little bit more nicely rather than filling in 1,000 REST API endpoints for friends and friend requests and pending requests and friends I already have and friends I've rejected and groups and users in the group and which users are admins and which are mods. Like, these all end up being separate REST API endpoints or query string variables that need to get passed in. It's actually really not a super awesome roadmap to try and write all of these RESTful API endpoints. So
with that said, you know, just because I think it's related, and Matt Mulloway sort of state of things in terms of the three core focuses, he had mentioned that the REST API, which is supposed to be a core focus, is supposed to have, or one of the goals is WP admin parity, and he had mentioned that there's been little to no progress made on that front. And are you surprised by that? I mean, after what you just said, maybe after sort of thinking about everything you need to create an endpoint for to have parity with WP admin, that doesn't sound like a glorious task.
It's the reason that I'm not surprised by it is because it, even with the best team in the world to work on it, it is a lot of work that still needs to be done. And there is a good team behind it. There always was, and there still is. But the way that WP admin is coded, or the expectations that are set for users about the way that things work, with things like bulk actions, for example, are hard to define in a RESTful endpoint that is traditionally only really interacting with one thing. And so There are just a lot of, there's a lot to do, and it's hard to, like, I'm supportive and I want to be supportive and I will help however, if ever I can. I don't even really think that I would be the most qualified person ever to work on a RESTful API, even with my experience trying to, I mean, helping build some of what was the original Jetpack version of that. But even an API like XMLRPC, which was used for, you know, for several years as the default API for the WordPress mobile application, is not a complete API, and we stopped really working on it before it ever got done. And so to take the same approach with just filling in it's a friendlier API, it's a nicer system to use, and all of those things that are very clearly evident, it is a better, exponentially better thing than XMLRPC. But it's just so much work, and historically it's been really difficult to do that much work on a volunteer team. And so it's not that I'm skeptical, and it's not that it'll never happen. It's just that I know how much work that it is and how hard everybody already is working. And it seems like a recipe either for burnout or broken hearts or expectations and things that I don't want to see happen. And so this was like, I think, like, without being a naysayer, this is sort of one of my original concerns. And everyone that was even working on the REST API, that was filling in posts and terms and users and all these things, they have all done the work. I mean, me thinking about the work that needs to get done being exhausting isn't anywhere near the exhaustion that the people feel that have spent the multiple years filling in the endpoints that we do already have, and there still being at least that many to go. There are days where you can look at what's ahead of you and think this is a very long road. But that doesn't mean it's not worth traveling. It doesn't mean that there isn't eventually an end in sight. It just means that either we need to stay steady as we go, or we need to course correct. And that's the beauty of open source. We get to course correct whenever we want to. So
you mentioned, I could talk to you all day apparently about all this stuff. but you know, we're an hour and a half here, but people haven't heard of WordPress Weekly in about 3 weeks. So I think they'll be okay with how long this is, but you mentioned, yeah, it was GraphQL. Yeah. GraphQL. Mm-hmm. So I know, we talk about all these API endpoints, and by the way, Drupal is being touted now is API first, and WordPress seems to be at a point where it's trying to, you know, it kind of did things the reverse way, and now it's trying to be API first, or, you know, largely API driven thanks to the REST API. And obviously that's a whole lot of work, but there was a lot of discussion on, well, with all the work it takes to get, you know, maybe WP admin parity with the REST API, there's a lot of talk as to whether WordPress should have gone the REST API route or GraphQL from the outset, because by the time the REST API gets done, you know, will it be time to move on to something else?
Mm-hmm. One of the things I really like about the way that Facebook evolved GraphQL is there is a tool with it called Graphical that is basically a GUI. It's an IDE for interacting with all of the endpoints that an API may have, but also that it was built as this middleware layer on top of all of the really complex things that something like Facebook needs to do, like relationship stuff and privacy stuff and the intersection of many users and their friends and their friends and their friends. And so it reminds me in a very small way of WordPress and posts and comments and terms and users and plugins and BuddyPress and activity and groups. We have all these, and WooCommerce and shopping carts and EDD and customers. Like, there are just so many things that plugins do and that core has in terms of things, objects, that are reminiscent of what Facebook has ran into very quickly, and the middleware that they needed to write for themselves to scale who works on the platform. And when you watch a GraphQL video or someone use Graphical, it feels very natural, more natural anyways, at least to me, and easier, a little bit more friendly. And I can imagine a world where we are able to define these little, the way that it works and register our GraphQL keys and objects or whatever they are. And WordPress already does all the hard stuff. It has a database layer. It has rewrite rules. It has object caching. It has everything that GraphQL needs. And GraphQL is the other thing that WordPress doesn't have. So it'll be exciting to see if, I mean, in the back of my mind, I really want to come up with like a very native feeling GraphQL plugin or something, but I've got BBPress to work on, so I don't get to do that right now.
That's right. That's right. Don't you forget BBPress. All right. Let's screw the tech talk. Let's go into a lightning round, and then let's wrap this baby up. What's your favorite taco filling?
Taco filling, cheese.
Now, what's your favorite type of cheese?
I'm pretty standard cheddar or provolone. I'm all right with a little pepper jack, but it's got to be the right pepper jack. And, you know, I'm from Wisconsin, so cheese curds in general are hard to avoid.
Where do you think Michael Aristad should go for lunch?
Qdoba.
There you go. And the last question, which I think is a good one. Who inspires you?
Oh, gosh, everyone. Everyone in some weird way. I'm inspired. I am inspired by the friends of mine that have kids, multiple, that somehow still manage to have full-time jobs and complete tasks. They're watching them be good parents and raise kids that seem pretty happy and really are deeply committed to making the world a better place for their children is probably one of the most inspiring things that I've yet to experience in my own life that I hope to. But if not, then I get to experience it through being an uncle to all of my friends as kids. So I think that's probably the my send off is all of the friends of mine or colleagues or WordPress contributors that are running around with their kids right now are probably the most inspiring to me right now.
And you'll be a wonderful father to Penny and Paul, which I found out Penny and Paul are Triple J's dogs. And, you know, I found it incredible that Paul is already 8 years old.
Man. Mr. Paul is eight. He'll be eight in October, I think.
There you go.
So Mr. Paul is eight.
So, any WordCamps, WordPress events in the near future that you'll be attending?
So WordCamp Europe is on the docket. I have yet to really book most of my travel or anything for that, but that is...
It's going to be kind of hard to drive there.
It's going to be hard to drive to Europe, that's true. As much as I would much rather, it's going to be very difficult to do. WordCamp US, most of the Midwestern ones I do really like to try and drive to if I can. And I don't know. I had the fascinating experience this year where my wife and I took vacation and drove down to Key West, and we stopped overnight in Atlanta. And it was the first time that I had been in a major city where a WordCamp was happening that I didn't know about. It just happened to be randomly on that weekend that we were there that a WordCamp was happening, and I had no idea it was there. So that, I think, is like our... that's our over the moon moment where we have jumped the cow, and there are WordCamps in so many places that it is impossible to keep up, and they are just everywhere every weekend all the time.
All right, how can people keep tabs in you? Because I have no problem keeping tabs in you. I know how, but for everyone else out there,
so you can read my blog jjj.blog, Twitter and GitHub at JJJ, and then if you're curious about any of the little plugins or doodads or widgets or things that I'm exploring, working on, or playing around with, You can check those out at pluginsloaded.com. And I'm working on sort of rebranding the core contribution sponsorship idea into an actual thing that is more than just me blogging about it. So if anyone is curious about how that turns out, then I guess keep on the lookout for that.
Well, as long as you keep doing stuff, I'll keep having you on the show. How about that?
It would be hard to stop me from doing stuff. So I look forward to coming back next year when
next year, like in 3 months.
When we talk about BB Press 2.6.
Right. Okay. Yeah, looking forward to that day too. And I could ask you, hey, what's going on with 2.7? I can't wait to ask you those questions. Hey man, thanks a lot for taking so much time out of your day today to be on the show. I always enjoy talking WordPress with you, talking about the past. You know, today we got a little personal. We got a little deep, but I think kind of heard a different side of you. And I think it's good and you know, in the WordPress community, this is OSMI Mental Health Month. Yeah. And, you know, you kind of dived into that a little bit. But, you know, that's one of the topics sort of making headway here in the WordPress space lately, you know, doing part thanks to Corey Miller, you know, Rich Robenkoff, Ed Finkler, and Michelle Butcher, and some of these other people who are doing talks at WordCamps about how important mental health is. You know, it's good to sort of come on to talk about it. You know, as remote workers, we're dwelling away or sitting in front of a computer in a cubicle in an office alone a lot, oftentimes, depending on your environment. And, you know, mental health is a pretty important thing. So I'm glad you kind of we dove into it a little bit. And, man, I'll have you back on here shortly.
Thank you. For anyone that wants to contribute or help on the OSMI front, the folks over at osmihelp.org are really trying to do pretty awesome stuff. And so I've recently tried to be a little bit more involved with them and getting to know how their community works. And, you know, it is something that is important to me. And we should probably, I think, prioritize a little bit more. But those folks are super nice and trying to do good stuff. So if anything this month, check them out and you know, see if you can give them a couple of bucks for what it is that they're trying to do. So.
I see a future episode of WordPress Weekly with Ed Finkler on the show to talk about it.
That would be awesome.
He just recently got an awesome position over there at OSMI. And he's going to actually be the keynote speaker at WordCamp Kent in June, which I'll be attending as well. You know, you should bring your wife down to Ohio again. I know she loves it.
more than Oklahoma City, right? Closed on Mondays? Is that
Tulsa. Closed on Mondays.
Tulsa, that's what it was. Closed on Mondays.
How about that? All right, man. Thanks a lot. All the best to you.
You're welcome.
Keep up the good work. As soon as we get off the show, I want you to start submitting patches to BB Press. And all the best to you, man.
Will do. Thank you, Jeff. You too.
And that's going to do it for this edition of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes in wptavern.com. If you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a review on iTunes. 5 stars, 1 star, it doesn't matter. Just tell me what you think of the show and rate it. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, that's JeffR0. And until next week, have a safe, enjoyable weekend. Talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. So long, everybody.